All right, joining us now, breaking down the draft that the Panthers had, Mick Mixon joins us. What's going on, Mick?
I'm all fired up. I've already minted all these guys as future stars.
Nice, I like it. Well, that kind of kills my first question.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were going to ask you, how do you feel about the Panthers draft? Apparently, they picked up nothing but stars.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Mainly, the first filter that I run this through as a play-by-play announcer is, are they from Samoa, and am I going to need to order Hooked on Phonics in order to say their name? So I think we check that box. I mean, who can't say Zach Sanchez and James Bradbury and Daryl Worley and Bo Sandlin and dudes like that, and, of course, Vernon Butler, an immense talent in round one. And so I think it's a pretty salty group. And, you know, we always walk this line between are we to believe what NFL GMs tell us, that we take the best player available? Or do they run it through a need-based filter as well? I think with the Panthers, it was probably a combination of both, with corner selections right after the defensive lineman in round one.
Yeah, you know, the thing I was going to say is there any concern that three of the five are not from what we would call the Power Five collegiate conferences? You know, sometimes you get gems, and sometimes you miss on these guys. Do you have any concern that three of these guys might be from, you know, smaller schools, we'll say?
I hadn't thought about that till you brought it up. I think the Panthers have done a fairly good job of vetting players, and other teams do as well. And really, you know, if you can play, you can play. If you can play against Montana State and Pivnik Tech and you know, the Fighting Oysters of Greenbelt A&M, then you probably be all right, because the combine sorts all that out. You know, you got immeasurables, but you've also got measurables. You have intangibles, but there are also tangibles. But it's an interesting question. I've always had a little bit of a prejudice, and I just have to say, by the way, that my key to the war room at Bank of America Stadium still does not fit. So I'm just, you know, I pass notes under the door and nobody pays attention. But I've always had just this amateurish kind of prejudice in favor of guys from the Southeast, from the Southeastern Conference, the ACC, everything else being equal, rather than a guy from Portland, Oregon, or from Los Angeles, mainly because these are tough combative warriors, but they're going to be playing under pressure and a long way from home. So if a guy's from closer to home, if he's a Southerner, then he doesn't have to learn about deviled eggs, sweet tea, baked beans, fried chicken. You know, he's already, in some of our traditions, he's already home free.
Yeah, and don't underestimate those Fighting Oysters. I mean, they are slippery, right? Oh, that was too easy. Well, okay.
They have a cheer. They have a great cheer, by the way. It goes like this: oysters, oysters, raw, raw, raw.
Well, we have descended into something very, very different all of a sudden. Well, the first pick, Vernon Butler, 30th overall. You know, there was so much depth in this draft at defensive tackle. I mean, they really could have waited and maybe gone after an offensive tackle if Feedy was available, or a pass rusher like Kevin Dodd. I mean, do you think they made the right move? Does Butler fill an immediate need, and couldn't he have been picked up elsewhere?
I think so. But, well, I think so to the need question. I don't know about getting picked up elsewhere. The Panthers were surprised he was still available. And, by the way, the Ineptech Fighting Oysters were a creation of Dick Palmer, a former University of Tennessee Radio Network broadcaster who created a show called the Art Turf Show back before you guys were ever born. I have to give a footnote to that material for anybody who recognizes it, because it is not original to me. But I was a big fan of the Art Turf Show back in the late 70s, early 80s. Anyhow, getting back to Vernon Butler, 6'5", 6'6", 320 pounds, and according to the coaches, guys can get stronger, especially through the lower body. Violent strike at the point of attack, anchor strength, two-gap in type of a D-tackle, and this is right in the Dave Gettleman mold, Mark and Mike. He loves these kind of, he calls them hog mollies. He loves these interior linemen that can help collapse the pocket, stop the run on the way to the quarterback.
Well, okay, so that fills one need, but you've got four other picks that didn't even touch what I think is a glaring need in, at the offensive line. I mean, are they going to be active here in free agency? I mean, what are they settled in with what they've got?
Well, I don't understand. Not that I disagree totally with the premise of your question, but the Panthers had one of the best offensive lines in the NFL last year. We set team records in a handful of offensive categories. Cam Newton was kept largely clean. I think part of the problem was nobody was talking about our offensive line until the Super Bowl. And I understand it. I mean, Denver did a great job getting very wide and exposing the Panther tackles, and they had a great plan. They did a great job. But I don't think that all of a sudden we can now go, uh-oh, the Panthers have a terrible offensive line because of what Denver's defense did in Super Bowl 50.
Yeah, I think I was thinking more in terms of getting some depth and some more youth in there if they, you know, for planning for the future. I mean, as opposed to three defensive backs, one of whom they paid a very, very high price to get Worley by moving up, giving up a couple of day three picks.
No, I hear you, and I really think that Dave Gettleman, I think one reason that you can throw a leg over the best player available saddle is because your needs are always you always have needs. So, but I think that the Panthers, I mean, Ryan Khalil is the unsung hero, and he's not going to be able to play forever. So I think, to your point, sooner or later the Panthers are going to have to say, okay, where's the next Jeff Saturday, Ryan Khalil? Where's the next great center that can set the protections and make Cam Newton and deliver the shotgun snap, the direct snap to Cam Newton in a consistent way?
Again, we're talking with Mick Mixon, Carolina Panthers, breaking down the draft for us. And, well, you got to say that, you know, at least you got two big defensive backs. I mean, 6'1", 6'2", for both of these guys. If they pan out, I mean, you've got some, you know, some guys that may be able to be a little bit more physical and help the defensive line get the time to get to the quarterback. So you got to like those two picks.
Definitely do, and I think that Dave Gettleman's philosophy also runs into the secondary because he believes that if your front seven is salty enough, that helps your corners. Not that you want to roll out there with average corners and safeties. Now, his stated goal is to have more consistency in the back end. That's been the one position since he's been GM that has been more of a you got to about wear a name tag when you walk through the building so people know who you are. I mean, especially now that we've lost Josh Norman. So with these three picks, that could help quiet that down.
All right, so when you look at the rest of the NFC South, you're talking about, you know, who had the saltiest draft of the bunch?
I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about Atlanta. I think with what they were able to do year one, under their new coach, I think, you know, with the Seattle defensive pedigree that he's got, wanting to get better on D, how do you guys read it?
Well, I mean, I think Neil Jones and Hooper could all be stars for them, and I think that those were good early picks. I don't know about Fuller. I mean, he's so late in the game, but, the Falcons make me nervous. I think they probably drafted better than the Panthers, even though, like you, my Panthers hat is firmly on. The Saints, Sheldon Rankins, Michael Thomas, Von Bell. It's hard to say. Is it possible that if we looked at it objectively, the Panthers might have had the fourth best draft in the NFC South?
Well, you would expect that. I'm not saying that that's the case, but you would expect that the way the NFL's draft order is determined and the way the scheduling computer, really everything about the NFL, conspires to help teams that didn't do as well. But I was a huge Von Bell fan. I mean, I'm no draftnik, but the Panthers, he looked like he would look good in a Panther uniform. Mm-hmm. Fast, physical, smart, just eating up ball carriers, good locker room guy. So it'll be interesting to see how his career pans out.
Mick, as you know, building a team also has to deal with the undrafted guys coming in. Dave Gettleman has done a very good job at doing that. A name that grabbed a lot of headlines, Jeremy Cash, when he signed out of Duke. A lot of people were surprised he went undrafted. Where do you see his role for this team, and could he have the most impact out of any of the draftees this year?
It's funny you said that, because I had to leave the building to go to a speak in Greensboro, and I ran into Coach Rivera. This doesn't often happen, but he wanders up our way, sometimes they run out of hazelnut creamer down on the coach's area, or he needs to use the copy machine or the laminating machine. So Ron Rivera is a great guy. So I ran into him and I said, "Coach, I'm on my way to Greek. Give me something I can say to the Piedmont Sports Club." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "What do you mean? What do I mean? Just give me some nuggets. Give me something to say about this free agent class or the draft class or anything." And he said, "All right." He said, "You tell him that we really, really like Cash, and we think he could project right into the mix of things." So there you go.
Wow. Got to like that. I mean, that's part of the whole process is getting the undrafted guys and getting them in there and giving them a chance and seeing what happens.
I know. I mean, I had to about beat it out of him, but he did. He did give me a little something.
Just stay out of the way of the hazelnut. That's stay away from the creamer, and you can stay out of his way. Now, nothing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ever does surprises me, but a second round pick on Roberto Aguayo, the kicker. Would you ever pick a kicker that high in the draft, Mick? Seriously, even if you could forecast the future.
Wait, the Raiders do.
Yeah. I'm asking Mick.
Sebastian,
he's smarter
Janikowski,
than
Janikowski. I was just thinking about that. Now, I mean, everybody, you got to have a philosophy, and they all miss them. But if you got a guy that can put it through the pipes consistently from 50 on in, somebody you know was going to have sort of a Robbie Gould-like accuracy for the first 8-10 years of his career, then I could see it, especially with PATs being moved back. If you were a bad weather team and you needed that cold-blooded assassin kicker that could go out there in the snow and ice and win you a game in December, might be worth the money. I'm a little worried about the Panthers' punt game, because I was a big fan of Brad Nortman. Brad Nortman looked like a football player. He looked long and lean and a strider, and if he had to make the tackle, he could at least give you a shot at it. Swayze Waters, I think, is talented, but he looks more – he's got more of a Doogie Howser look to him. And I say that with all due respect, because I'm – you know, the electric door at the Harris Teeter doesn't open for me, so but anyhow, I'm not – being depended on to play NFL football either.
All right, last thing before we let you go, how much do you think the whole Laremy Tunsil fiasco mixed things up in the first round, and did it kind of make, even though it's a terrible thing that happened, he kind of created his own monster there, but was it kind of fun to see what everybody was doing and how they were scrambling?
Heck yeah. I was watching the draft with my wife, and she said about halfway through, she said, can I turn over to see how the Housewives of Orange County are? And I said, why would you want to leave that? This is better than that. You got a mask, some kind of a bong mask thing, and Facebook, and his Twitter's been hacked, and he's dropped like a lead weight. I mean, it was great theater.
Hey, I'm quick to criticize Goodell, but I think he was right that drama added interest. I mean, I know it seemed ill-timed coming from him when they asked him how he felt about what unfolded, but it did add a lot of intrigue to that first day.
Well, I know, and then you get him on the interview, and he says that somebody asked him. I don't think it was Deion Sanders, because I think he had moved on down the chain to another interview, but they said, "Did you take money from any coaches at the University of Mississippi?" And he said, "Well, I'd have to say yes to that." And I could just see, cut, go to commercial, get him off the stage before he says something else.
Wow. Well, Mick, as always, man, we appreciate you hopping on with us.
Oh, I appreciate you guys appreciating it, man. You guys were a lot of fun, and I think Panthers are going to be okay. It's going to be a great year, a challenging schedule, but can't wait to rock and roll.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot, Mick.
Thanks, guys.